Metro-Goldwyn-Mayer. Crown Productions presents A Kiss Before Dying. Robert Wagner, Jeffrey Hunter, Virginia Leith, Joanne Woodward, Mary Astor, George MacCready, screenplay by Lawrence Roman from the novel by Ira Levin. Music by Lionel Newman. Directed by Yaird Oswald. A framed newspaper cutting on a wall features a photograph of a handsome, dark-haired young man. A heavy wooden wireless sits on a table against which leans a set of golf clubs. More framed newspaper stories adorn the walls, along with a red pennant emblazoned with Stoddart U. Bud Corliss, the man whose photo features in the newspaper cuttings, comforts a sobbing young woman.
Crying isn't going to help.
I just can't help it.
Oh, Dory.
I've known about it for days. I didn't want to say anything until I was sure, but I've known.
No mistake possible?
No.
How far?
2 months almost.
Bud reaches for a cigarette packet.
You didn't give the doctor your right name, did you?
No. He knew I was lying. It was awful.
Oh, you shouldn't have gone alone. I should have gone with you.
What are we going to do?
Well, I know you want me to say we'll get married right away tomorrow, but...
Don't want to get out of it, do you?
Don't even think that. I love you.
Oh, I love you.
I want to marry you more than anything else in the world. Only you're...
He doesn't matter.
He's your father. He does what he thinks is important.
All I know is we don't have any choice.
Look, honey. Look, I know this is a shock, but... But it isn't the end of the world. Sure, it's a problem, but a thing like this can change, Dory.
No.
Well, there's always a chance. You know that.
I suppose so.
Dory.
They kiss, and Bud rests his head on Dory's shoulder.
Come on, honey. We better go. My mother will be home soon. Okay?
Okay.
She nods and sits up on the bed she's been lying on. Bud stubs out his cigarette.
I don't feel good. I can't even eat.
Well, that's natural.
I know, but... Girls in the sorority house are going to start asking questions.
Well, I know what we can do about that, Dory. A friend of mine, Hermie Gaston. Remember him? One of his cousins owns a pharmacy. Hermie works there nights. I could talk to him. Maybe he'd give me something to make you feel better.
Well, you won't say anything, will you?
No, of course not.
Dory starts to cry again.
Oh, Dory. Come on, will you stop worrying? Everything's going to be all right.
She nods.
Okay.
Come on, honey, we better go.
Composing herself, Dory gets to her feet and they head for the door.
Be careful, you don't leave anything around.
Dory grabs her white handbag from a table. Bud pulls up in a bronze convertible and switches off the engine and lights. He turns to Dory in the passenger seat as he gets out.
Okay.
He heads into a drugstore, where a man's sitting at a soda fountain, reading a magazine.
Hey, what's this bit?
This is an article on the curvature of space.
Curvature of space?
Mm-hmm. Hi.
How you been?
Fine, yourself?
Pretty good. Say, you got something for an upset stomach? Real potent?
Well, yes, I have something that just came in today.
That'll do it, huh?
It should.
Good night, Elsie.
Good night, Gordon. Don't get run over.
Okay.
How much?
$1. Gordon
bumps into Bud.
Thanks, welcome.
Bud heads back to the car, with Gordon following a short distance behind.
Want to slide over, honey?
He hands her a packet.
Yeah.
What is it?
No, I don't know for sure. Something to settle your stomach. It can't hurt you.
All right. Well, what are we going to do?
I don't know, honey. I thought we'd wait a while to see what happens.
Why do we have to wait? Why don't we get married right now, huh?
You know why as well as I.
It doesn't matter. He hardly seems like a father at all.
What did he do to your mother? Go on, say it. He threw her out. One little slip, he finds out years later, divorced her, sick and all, not caring one bit for you or your sister. Now, what do you think he'd do to you if we married this way, without me even meeting him, and then a few short months later? He'd forget you ever existed. You wouldn't get a penny.
I don't care.
But I do. Not for me, certainly, but for you I care. I've got to for your sake, don't you see?
No.
Dory, you've had money all your life. You couldn't do without it. We'd beat each other's throats in a year.
Oh, no, we wouldn't, not us.
All right. Okay, honey, we love each other so much we never argue. So where are we? In a furnished room with paper drapes eating spaghetti 7 nights a week? If I saw you living like that, I'd take out insurance and jump in front of a car.
They start at the sound of a car door slamming.
I had it planned so beautifully. I'd have come to Paysan with you, met him. I'd have gotten him to like me. We'd have gotten married, come back here to finish up. A little apartment of our own right near campus. And no early morning classes.
Oh, stop it!
Dory.
What are you trying to do? Why are you saying these things? Look, I'm pregnant now, right now.
I know, honey. I know, but I was just trying to show you how beautiful it could have been.
But it isn't. It's the way it is.
Dory, I know it is, but all I'm asking you is just wait a few days.
And if there's no change?
No question, then. None at all. We'll get married right away and forget all about you, Father. Okay?
Okay. Don't you want me to drive you home?
No, thanks. I feel like walking. Good night, Dory.
Good night.
He steps out of the car. And Dory starts up the engine.
It's not right.
What?
For anyone to love somebody as much as I love you.
That makes us even.
Then we haven't got anything to worry about. Haven't you heard? Love conquers all.
Dory slips the car into gear and drives away, leaving Bud standing at the curbside. He plunges his hands into his trouser pockets and saunters away, pausing briefly to gaze in the window of a jewelry store. Later, he arrives home and lets himself in. A woman with a short cropped hairstyle is ironing in a simply furnished room.
Hello,
son.
Hi, Mother.
He kisses her on the cheek.
Had your dinner?
No, I'm not hungry.
There's a sandwich in the kitchen. I'll get it.
Never mind. I don't feel like anything.
You've got to eat something.
Why?
Walking through to his bedroom, he takes a slim book out of an envelope, then unlocks a drawer and takes out a similar book with a rubber band wrapped around it. Mrs. Corliss brings him a sandwich and a glass of milk on a small tray.
Aren't you feeling well?
Oh, Mother, will you please?
There's something wrong. You can't fool me. I know you too well.
Mother, please, will you? It's just that... I have to get something special ready for speech tomorrow, and I haven't much time to do it in.
Work too hard. You ought to play more.
I haven't any time.
Well, a person's got to relax sometime.
He turns to face her.
Look, Mother, I'm 25 years old. Where am I? No place. I don't want to wind up like Dad with holes in my shoes.
Oh, you're not like him. Not at all.
You'll see. Anything you decide to do, you'll do it. I know.
Sure, I'm a genius.
I think so.
She heads out, and Bud adds the two books to some others laid out on his bed. They're all annual reports from different years of the Kingship Copper Company. Bud gathers them together in a small pile and sits back against a pillow, looking thoughtful. Bud trots down some steps in the grounds of a large white building with a colonnaded frontage. Now he steps briskly up the tiered planked seating of a deserted viewing stand beside a sports track. Dory's waiting for him.
Hi.
Hi.
Any change?
Nope.
He sits down beside her and stretches out.
Well, I think we ought to decide and set a date. You're not mad, are you?
No, of course not.
Don't be so unhappy about it. I know it's not the way we planned, but it'll be all right.
Sure, it'll be great. I'll quit school, get a job.
No. No, you won't have to. You get more money from the government now because you have a wife.
$105 a month.
Will other people get along?
Soda jerk. How does that sound? I had such plans. Everybody expected so much of me.
It's all my fault. It's always the girl's fault.
Look, maybe there is a way to tell you. Well, we could call your father.
No.
But Dory, we could appeal to him. Tell him we did a terrible thing. Make amends.
It won't do any good. I know him. I know the way he feels about me.
But Dory, all we have to...
No. We'll get along. Prove to him that we don't need him.
Who needs him? I'm only asking.
I don't even want him. Look, for the first time in my life, I feel like me. I'm not Dorothy anymore. That's my father's daughter and his property. I'm Dory now, because you said so.
Oh, sure. Sure, I've done wonders for you. I really have. New name, new address, Poverty Row it'll be.
Oh, no. I'm gonna be rich. Don't you see? I'll have everything I ever wanted. I'll have somebody to love and to take care of. And I'll have somebody to love me just for myself.
Okay, honey. We'll go down to the municipal Friday and...
Why Friday?
Well, a few days won't make any difference. Be practical, honey. There's things to take care of, the license, and besides, if we go Friday, we'll have the whole weekend for our honeymoon.
That's right. Oh, it's exciting, isn't it? Let's go somewhere, huh?
No, I can't, Dory. I've got a chem lab and a ton of Spanish. I want to get things cleared away, so we'll be free.
Okay. I'll get to work, too. Oh, I love you.
She goes to kiss him, and he pulls away.
You don't want to get out of it, do you?
Silly. Who wants out?
Call me?
Yeah, first chance. Dory?
Hmm?
You haven't told anybody. Your sister, or...
No, but I thought I ought to.
Is that wise?
Oh, Ellen's all right. She'll understand. She'll even help.
You know, Dory, I was thinking. Maybe we ought to keep it our little secret until after the wedding.
Okay. Anything you say.
As she turns, she trips and tumbles down several rows of seating benches, but feigns concern.
You all right?
Hmm? Yes.
She gets to her feet, slightly dazed but seemingly unhurt.
Had me worried.
Oh, it's all right. Bye.
Dory heads down a ramp, nearly colliding with Gordon at the bottom.
Hey, Kingship.
Oh.
You forgot our appointment last night, didn't you?
Oh, Gordon, I'm sorry. I wasn't feeling very well.
Now, you listen, young lady. I've got a reputation. No one, but no one that I've tutored thus far has flunked out, so I don't want you starting anything.
Well, I'm going to be kind of busy next week, but what do you want me to do?
Well, I think you run over chapter 14 and try the problems, will you?
And I am sorry. Bye.
Bye.
He heads off past a sign that reads, "Be careful, speed kills," in the background, but strides towards a large brownstone building. Later he's lying on grass, reading in the shade of a large tree. He plucks a blade of grass and chews on it thoughtfully, then gets to his feet and hurries off. Now he's searching through a shelf of books in a library. His hand stops beside one, and he looks around warily before reaching for a larger book on a higher shelf. He picks it off the shelf and opens it, then slips the smaller book deftly between its pages and closes it quickly. Heading to a table, he sits down and opens the large book to reveal the smaller one nestling inside. It's titled Toxicology, Poisons and Their Antidotes. Now he strolls across a lawn towards a building which has a plaque beside the entrance reading School of Pharmacy. Inside, he stands uncertainly in a hallway where people are milling about and chatting animatedly. No one notices him slip quietly down a set of stairs. He stops at the bottom, pretending to study a notice board, when a man wearing a lab apron emerges through a door next to him. He watches the man unlock a door marked Chemistry Supplies and go inside. A few moments later, the man comes out carrying a large glass vial. He checks the door is locked before heading off. Budge pretends to read the notice board again as the man returns to the room he originally came out of. Two people pass Bud and head up the stairs. He waits until they've disappeared from view, then takes a few steps towards the chemistry storeroom. A woman wearing a lab apron emerges from another room beside a row of metal lockers. As she heads to the storeroom, he pulls a key from his pocket and shows it to her as she's unlocking the door, making as if he wanted to unlock the door for her. Unsuspecting, she opens the door and switches on a light. Bud follows her inside.
You in Abison's class?
No.
What's with him anyway?
I don't know. He's like that, I guess.
Now, did he say aldehydes or ketones?
Aldehydes, I think.
Well, I wish he wouldn't talk like he had a mouthful of mush.
She pours some liquid into a glass container. Bud takes a small notebook from his jacket pocket and opens it. He closes the notebook, then looks alarmed when he hears the woman locking the door as she leaves. Bud removes an envelope and a white cloth from his pocket. He puts the envelope on a worktop and uses the cloth to pick up a glass bottle. He then spots some latex gloves lying close by, pockets the cloth and puts them on. He tips some white powder from the bottle into the envelope, then is startled by the sound of the door being unlocked. The woman enters and smiles at him.
I'm not much good without my notebook.
She smiles at him again as she heads out. Working swiftly, he folds up the envelope containing the white powder and slips it into the inside pocket of his jacket. He replaces a stopper in the top of the bottle and returns it to the shelf. Bud glances around the storeroom, then walks along its tall shelves, examining the many boxes, bottles and glass jars of chemical supplies. He selects a small green box and pours some of the pills it contains into the envelope. Folding the envelope, he returns it to his pocket before making sure that he's replaced the box to its correct place on the shelf. Bud switches off the storeroom light and removes the gloves. He's about to leave when he glances over to the workbench and realizes he's left his notebook along with a school book there. He's just picked them up when he's startled by the bell. Bud opens the door a crack and sees a lecturer talking to a student in the hall outside.
Let me see your notes. Try it with ether.
They move on, and Bud cautiously steps from the storeroom. He glances around and sees that the hallway is deserted. He walks over to the stairs and heads up. A man selects a record on a jukebox in a restaurant bar where Bud's sharing a table with Dory. She opens a slender box to show him a new pair of gloves.
Just as autumn is ending.
I'm sure they'll fit. I made them the same size as the other ones.
They're beautiful.
I want to do everything for you. And I will.
Finish your hamburger, will you? Dory, you remember that picture of me I gave you?
Mm-hmm.
Could you lend it to me? I'd like to have some copies made. Mother wants to send some to relatives.
Have you told her yet?
No, I didn't think it was fair. You're not telling your family.
I'm dying to meet her.
She hands him the photo.
What's that?
That's me a couple of years ago. Pretty skinny, huh? Dad, I'm telling. It's her birthday. She just got a new hi-fi set. She's crazy about Debussy.
Not bad. A little beat.
I think it's very handsome, and I want it back.
Come on, honey. It's getting late. What have
I... Bud leaves some money on the table, and they leave the restaurant. When you kiss me goodbye. Outside, they walk to Bud's car.
Darling, I've been meaning to ask you, can we go to the prom?
Well, I thought you didn't want us to be seen around. All those out-of-the-way places we've been going to.
Oh, I just didn't want it to get back to Dad that I was going steady. It doesn't matter now.
Do you really want to go to the prom?
Please.
Then that's where you're going to go.
She kisses her hand and touches his cheek with it before climbing into the car. Arriving in a small lecture hall, Dory walks behind Bud and touches the back of his head to get his attention.
Hi. Struggling with your Spanish.
I'll help you after class.
The lecturer enters and faces the class.
Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Last time, I'm afraid the bell interrupted us at a time when we were developing several major concepts. And so because of that, I think it might be a good idea if we were to review some of the ground that we covered last time. I might point out to you, if I may, that our relationship demands eventually a certain testing program in this class, so you might find it a good idea to pay attention to what I'm saying, and perhaps to this diagram on the board.
As the lecturer speaks, Bud passes a book to Dory, in which he finds a note written in Spanish with the words, "Translate, please," at the bottom. She opens the notebook and begins to do so.
We discussed Puritanism, you may remember. I don't want to say too much about that again, but remember that with this concept of predestination, you have what is...
Being as discreet as possible, Dory hands the book back to Bud.
It might, in fact, even be called theological determinism. And then later we came to what I like to call rationalism.
He takes it and opens the book to find the translation inside. It reads, "Darling, I hope you will forgive me for the unhappiness that I will cause. There is nothing else I can do." Bud closes the book, and although he returns his eyes to the lecturer, his thoughts seem elsewhere.
In rationalism, you have an optimism. You believe that the universe is known. That's perfect.
Now Bud's at home wearing the latex gloves to type an address onto an envelope. It begins, "Miss Ellen Kingship." When he's finished, he takes the piece of paper Dory wrote the translation on, folds it, and places it in the envelope. He licks the envelope, seals it, then removes his gloves. Now Dory's taking a call on a payphone in the hallway of her college rooms.
Hello?
Dory? Me. Listen, I've got to see you right away.
Can't come out right now. I just washed my hair.
That's important, Dory.
Is it anything to do with tomorrow?
Yes.
Something's wrong?
Just the opposite. It's wonderful news.
Well, tell me.
I want to see your face when I tell you. You can meet me, can't you?
Where?
How about the fountain? 15 minutes, okay?
Okay. Bye. Hi.
Hi, Annabelle.
Boy, have I been up ready.
You sound like it.
Yeah. You know what happened? I ran into this fellow I used to know. Guess what he's doing? He's the assistant manager at the Desert Palms, and he thinks he can get us a bungalow for the weekend for just a couple of bucks.
Wonderful.
Yeah, yeah. I'm on my way to see him about it now to see if he can swing it. Now, how's that for luck?
You feel better about it, don't you?
I admit I was nervous at first. But it's going to work out. I know it is. Oh, before I forget, I saw Hermie today. He gave me these.
What are they?
For you.
I don't need anything. I feel fine now.
Oh, they're not for your stomach, Dory. They're vitamins, real high-potency stuff, brand new. Hermie just got some samples in. He's going to order some more for us. Fine mother you're going to be. You don't even keep up with the latest developments. These were in all the leading medical journals last month.
Beautiful father. I suppose you know everything that's in them cover to cover.
I don't have to. I know Hermie. Darling, I know you can't go to the doctor yet, but I do want you to start taking care of yourself.
Nothing.
Use your handkerchief. The gelatin might melt. You're supposed to take these after dinner, so you can do that when you get back to the house. If you don't care about your family's health, I do. Listen, honey, I gotta go. I gotta meet Stanley. Good night, Dory. Sweetheart? Both of them.
Dory blows him a kiss and hurries away. Bud watches her go, then checks his watch before striding off in the opposite direction. Now Bud's flicking away a cigarette as he waits impatiently at the side of a road. A pedestrian walks past, and Bud steps over to a payphone booth. He pushes a coin in and dials a number. He glances up and down the street as he waits to be connected.
Hello?
Dory? Me. I just saw Stanley. It's all set. We got the deal.
Oh, that's wonderful.
Yeah. I already put down a deposit on it to seal it. Dory, did you take the castles?
Yes.
When?
Just a few minutes ago.
Dory? Listen, I forgot to tell you. They might hurt a little. Burn or give you some pains. But don't get frightened. Hermie said that some people are allergic to them at first. But you don't have to call anyone.
All right. See you tomorrow.
Good night. Goodbye, baby.
Having hung up, Bud leaves the booth and moves to a mailbox where he posts the letter. Bud's in the bathroom at home when his mother appears outside with a glass of orange juice.
You're the greatest.
You want some egg?
No, thanks. I don't want to be late for class. Mother? Pick one.
A tie rack.
You know, Mother, I've been thinking. Maybe I'm wasting my time at the university.
Why, what do you mean?
Oh, I don't know. I thought maybe I'd quit school, get a job in some big business. I don't know. Hey, you know, I've got an idea. Why don't you quit work early tonight and we'll go out to dinner and catch an early show?
Oh, you don't want to go out with me.
Well, I certainly do. You're still my best girl, aren't you? And I've been neglecting you lately. You tell Mr. Miller that you want to leave early tonight, that you've got a date with your son.
We'll see.
Mrs. Corliss goes, and Bud returns the tie that she selected to the rack and picks another one. Later, Bud arrives at his college building. He heads into the lecture hall, where a handful of students are already sitting at the desks. Taking a seat himself, he glances around the room with an air of quiet satisfaction. Dory enters the hall, and her gaze meets Bud's, who looks stunned to see her. Looking puzzled, she approaches him, but he hurriedly clambers past her. Dory follows Bud as he rushes from the hall.
It's my side, where I was wounded. Just gonna be a twinge every once in a while.
But you're having a heart attack or something.
I'm fine now. Will you go back in class?
You haven't very often?
Dory, the lecture's beginning.
I don't care. I want to stay here with you.
You can't. I mean, I got something important to do, and I got to do it right now. Now, will you go back in class?
I don't want to.
Dory, then go to the house. I'll phone you.
But, darling.
Dory, I can't stand you.
At a post office.
Last night about 9:30. Look, I got to get it back. It was mailed by mistake.
Sorry, I'd like to help, but it's too late.
What do you mean it's too late?
It'll be delivered in an hour or so.
Bud thinks for a moment before leaving the post office. Outside, his eyes are drawn to something across the street. He's looking at a tall, multi-story building. cart crosses a busy junction and heads towards it. Running past a number of cars, he goes through the main entrance of the building and immediately begins to examine a wall-mounted list detailing dozens of names and departments. He then goes into a nearby room where there's a payphone and makes a call. Dory's waiting nervously by the phone at her rooms.
Hello?
Dory, me.
You all right?
Oh, yeah, fine, just fine. Are you ready?
No.
Well, didn't I tell you? There's no point in waiting. Meet me at Congress by the clock at 12:15. You can make it, can't you?
All I have to do is change.
Good.
Oh, I better bring something along to prove I'm over 18.
Dory, it's still our secret, isn't it?
Of course.
Remember now, 12:15 sharp, okay?
Okay.
Bud hangs up and walks from the building. A sign on the wall reads, Marriage License Bureau. A large street clock reads 12:35 as Dory approaches Bud, who's waiting beneath it.
Hello, husband. I'm sorry I was so late.
Bud immediately takes Dory's arm and hurries her across the street to the marriage license building. She's dressed in a smart jacket and skirt, while Bud's changed into a light-coloured suit. They both get into a busy lift. Shortly, they arrive at their floor.
Wait for me.
Nervous bridegroom. Now, how dumb can you get? I should have called first. 20 minutes yet.
Let's go have a coat.
Listen, I've got an idea. Why don't we go up to the roof? It's a terrific day. I bet we can see for miles. Last chance to see the world as a single woman. Let's walk. It's only two flights. Come on.
All right.
They step out onto the roof, and Bud leads Dory over to the edge of the building. They look down on an impressive view of the city, which spreads away to the horizon.
It's beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
Dory stares at Bud as he lights a cigarette. He leads her over to the far side of the building, and she leans against a low wall, bordered on the outside by a sloping roof of red tiles.
Look at that sky.
It's so bright.
Bud eyes the tiles.
Honey, look, the campus.
Look, you can almost see the house. Why, those girls gonna be surprised. They don't even know I'm going with you. I feel so good I can't tell you.
You gonna write your sister or phone her?
Oh, phone. Who can wait for letters? You'll like Ellen, you'll see.
I'm sure I will.
Darling, you're not sorry about the way things turned out, are you?
Of course not.
She takes a drag on his cigarette and runs her hands over his hair.
You know, I lied to you. You know those pills you gave me?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't take them.
Why not?
I'm so ashamed, I don't know how to say it. It's just that, well, I knew how you felt about the baby. First, anyway. I was afraid you might want to... Oh, it doesn't matter. Anyway, I'm very ashamed. But I'm glad I told you. There's no way to start a marriage with deceit.
I forgive you.
He kisses her on the forehead, then on the lips, before sitting her down on a section of the wall that's not bordered by tiles.
Don't look down. You might get dizzy.
He holds her arms.
Dory?
Hmm?
What'd you do with the capsules?
They're in my bag.
New blouse?
No. No, it's old as the hills.
You know something?
What?
You look like a very happy girl.
I am. Never been a happier one.
I have something to do with it?
Everything. I've never felt like this before in my whole life.
I know what you mean.
Hadn't we better go?
This time. You know something else?
What?
You're really very sweet. No fooling. The sweetest, gentlest person I've ever known.
You're prejudiced.
No. It's true. I love you. I really do.
I believe you.
The thing is, you'll never really know how I love you. I mean, no one can really understand the way the other loves.
I don't believe that.
It's true, Dory. It really is.
Bud kisses her, then pushes her off the building. She plunges to her death, and Bud bows his head for a second before stepping back from the edge and quickly removing the latex gloves from his breast pocket. He puts them on, then opens Dory's handbag, which still rests on top of the low wall. He takes out the pills and puts them in his pocket before rushing from the scene. In the chief of police's office...
Darling, I hope you will forgive me for the unhappiness that I will cause. There is nothing else that I can do. Well, note and the medical report there seem to tell the whole story. Terrible thing. I sympathize.
I realize it's too late to keep the story out of the papers, but I'd appreciate it if certain details were omitted.
I understand. Some things are best kept out of the papers. Especially when it's about youngsters.
I knew your daughter, Mr. Kingship. She was a very fine girl.
You knew her?
Not as a policeman, but as a tutor. I helped her in mathematics.
My nephew works in the office with me part-time while he's going to school.
Have any idea who the man was? No. But you realize, of course, that he's not legally responsible for your daughter's death.
Not legally.
We can do some checking if you like.
If you think it would accomplish anything, Mr. Kingship, except to stimulate the kind of talk that you want to avoid...
You're right.
Well, that seems to be all. Oh, there were some valuables in her purse.
Dispose of them as you see fit.
But...
I'd consider it a favor.
Leo Kingship leaves.
Miss Kingship, if there's anything that I can do to be of assistance in any official way, why, please feel free to call on me. My name's Gordon Grant.
You've already been helpful, Mr. Grant.
You know, there's just no explaining why these things have to happen. I'm very sorry.
Ellen follows her father out. The two exit the building together. Leo stops to face his daughter, but she ignores him. They both walk to a waiting car. A chauffeur closes the door, and a moment later, the car drives off, with Ellen still steadfastly avoiding her father's gaze. Nearby, Bud's on a bench, where he's been sitting with his back turned, pretending to read a newspaper. With the car gone, he settles down to read the paper properly. In a large garden with a lush lawn, Ellen, who's wearing a black swimsuit, gets up from the sun lounger mattress she's been sunning herself on. She pulls on a bathing cap and climbs onto a swimming pool diving board. As she dives into the water, a butler appears with a phone.
Miss Ellen, Mr. Carlos is calling.
The butler plugs the phone into a socket next to a table. Ellen walks over, drying herself off with a towel, and takes a seat.
Thank you. Hello, Bud. I told you, you're coming here for Thanksgiving. Yes. I thought we could have dinner tonight here, too. For once, let's get to the ballet on time.
All right, then. Dinner out if you're so proud. 7 o'clock, I'll be ready. Goodbye.
Hanging up, Ellen takes a small package that's handed to her by the butler. She opens it and reads the letter that's inside, along with a slender belt.
Dear Ellen, you may recognize this as the belt of the suit Dorothy wore last. We were sorority sisters, and on her last day, just before she went out, she borrowed one of my belts. It was a cheap leather belt, and we both knew it didn't go with her suit at all. Still, she wanted it and left this one in its place. I hope I was right in waiting these many months before sending it. Sincerely, Annabelle Koch.
Leo arrives.
What is that?
Dorothy's belt. A girl from her sorority sent it.
Very thoughtful of her.
Or thoughtless.
How do you feel about those things?
I'd have thrown it away and not mentioned it.
I know.
What was accomplished by it?
What has to be accomplished by it? Some people do things out of nothing more than sentiment. Softness, you'd probably call it.
As opposed to my callousness, my hardness. I think, Ellen, you mistake parading an emotion for feeling one.
I don't think I've paraded mine any more than you've felt yours. If you've had one moment of remorse, one second when you even wondered if you were responsible, then you've concealed it wonderfully. And of my deepest admiration, if not sympathy.
That's true. I haven't dwelt on the matter to the point of distorting the facts.
I haven't distorted them. Not in my own mind, at least. I said once long ago I couldn't believe she killed herself. I haven't changed a bit.
Ellen.
Yes, Dad?
I thought tonight it might do us both good to... Well, Vincent said something about the ballet.
I'm going with Bud. He's picking me up at 7.
Well, when does that young man get his studying done?
You might have asked the same thing of me. As a matter of fact, he's a very good student. And I like him very much.
That's fine, Ellen. I'm glad.
Now Ellen's standing thoughtfully in her bedroom. A maid answers the phone for her.
Kingship's residence.
Your Lupton call.
Yes, right here. Your call to Lupton, Miss Ellen.
Thank you, Mary. Hello?
Oh, Miss Kingship. It's nice to hear you again.
You once offered a helping hand, Mr. Grant. I'm taking you at your word.
Well, that's the idea. You name it, and I'll try and do it.
And I'd rather discuss it with you in person, not over phone.
Well, to tell you the truth, I'd prefer that myself.
Tomorrow afternoon? I could leave here in the morning and be there about...
Wait a minute. I think we've hit a snag. No, I have to be in Deming tomorrow. I promised to give a lecture at the State Teachers College. How about the day after?
Could you meet me in the lobby of the San Carlos Hotel? Say 8 o'clock?
Tonight?
Yes. I'll try for the first plane out of here. I promise not to hold you up. I just don't want to lose 2 days. Please, I'd appreciate it very much.
All right, Miss Kingship, I'll be there.
Thank you. Thank you so much. Mary? Will you get my pink cotton dress for me? And an overnight bag.
But I'm getting things ready for tonight.
I have to cancel that. And I want you to deliver a message to Mr. Corliss when he calls for me. There's no way I can reach him now. Tell him something important has come up about Dorothy. Some new information. And I'm having to leave for Lupton now to talk to the police. Ask him to forgive me. Tell him I'll call him the minute I get back.
I'll tell him, Miss Ellen.
Airport? Reservations desk, please. Then, just before I called you, I remembered something that happened 2 days before she died. I mailed her gloves to her. She'd had them a long time and was fond of them. But the gloves she wore the day she died...
Yeah, I know. They were wrong.
They were brand new. Don't you even begin to see?
I guess we'll just have to face it. You're talking to a pretty stupid man.
Brand new gloves. A borrowed belt. A blue handkerchief, an old blouse. Something old, something new. Something borrowed, something blue.
Gordon's about to light his pipe, but then blows the match out as he takes on board what Ellen is saying. He stands up and paces thoughtfully, banging his pipe out on an ashtray.
Where's the marriage license bureau?
In the municipal building.
I think Dorothy went there to get married, and not to kill herself.
To go a step further, Mr. Grant, I don't think she did kill herself.
And the suicide note?
Where did it say suicide? I hope you will forgive me for the unhappiness I'll cause. There is nothing else I can do. Her marriage would have made my father unhappy. But as we know now, what else could you do?
Gordon sits down next to Ellen.
If we can identify her boyfriend, I think you'll find I'm right. And I've done some thinking about him, too. Dorothy wrote me when the semester began. Said she met someone. In English literature, I believe. Who was a real thing. She didn't mention his name, but...
Ellen. You've really been thinking about this, haven't you? I mean, you've done a lot of thinking.
Brooding, my father calls it. You can call it that, too. I'm not sensitive.
I know that when tragedy hits hard, that... Well, the mind is apt to come up with a lot of far-fetched ideas.
Like this. In other words, you don't believe me.
Well, I didn't say that.
What about your uncle? Would he?
Well, if you think I lack imagination, you ought to have a session with him.
Thanks very much anyway, Mr. Grant.
Gordon. Hey, look. Let me tell you a little more about my uncle. If your sister was murdered, he wants to know about it as much as you do, and so do I. Now, I'll admit there wasn't much of any kind of investigation, but frankly, at that time, there wasn't a need for one. All right. Let's say there is now. Let's say we at least check into it, okay?
And you will help?
Got yourself a date for the day after tomorrow morning. That's when I'll be back.
And this student lent my sister a fairly large sum of money. The trouble is, we can't find any record that she ever repaid him. And he's evidently felt awkward about reclaiming it.
I understand.
What makes us feel awkward? We don't know who he is. Just that he's tall and slender and was in her English class. I thought if you'd let me look at the records.
Yes, but that was two semesters ago. He may not even be here now.
If I can name him, I can find him.
I'll have you talk with our registrar. She might be able to help you.
Harvey Loveridge, 5'3", 164. Roy Dublin, 5'8", 151.
Mr. Dublin wears glasses, a bohemian type, sloppy clothes and such.
Dwight Powell, 6'1", 174.
Very good looking, dark haired, polished, a speech major.
Speech? Dorothy said he had a tape recorder. They were going to send me a birthday message and never got to it. Do you have an address? This one is scratched out.
Oh, he must have moved. Yes, Watkins Dorm. He moved in last semester. It might be easier to reach him at KBRI. He runs a disc jockey show at night.
Where's that?
Municipal building, top floor.
Thank you. You've been very helpful.
Ellen leaves the school offices and walks off down the corridor. Bud's been loitering nearby. He waits till the coast is clear, then saunters towards the offices. As he watches, the secretary vacates the reception, stepping into an adjacent room. Bud takes the opportunity to go to the reception desk, where he sneaks a look at the address card that's been left visible in the open index card box. He walks away again. Ellen's dialing a number on a payphone.
Dwight Powell, please. Is this Dwight Powell? I know what you did to Dory. I know all about it. Dory Kingship. You know very well who I mean. Meet me at the Esquire Club, 11 o'clock. I'll tell you what I want.
It's nighttime as Ellen walks up to the entrance of the Esquire Club, a neon-lit cocktail lounge. She stops and looks through the open doorway, then looks up and down the street, glancing at her watch. She makes her way across the empty road in front of the club and along an alley on the other side. Bud pulls to a stop in a car opposite the club. Ellen lingers in the shadows of the alley, observing the entrance to the club. Ellen retreats further into the alley as someone steps along the pavement towards her. A woman appears at a window set in the alley wall.
Hello now, Nick. Wait, me, are you?
A man appears and follows Ellen to the end of the alley.
Don't touch me. Let me go. The police know I'm here.
What are you talking about?
Let me go.
Not until you tell me what this is all about. Did you make that crazy phone call?
Take your hands off me.
Look, I'm Dwight Powell. Who are you?
Let's go someplace where there are people around.
Any place? Now look, tell me what this is all about, huh?
You go first.
The man shakes his head in exasperation, but then walks back out of the alley, and Ellen follows him. Later, they're sitting in a club together.
Sure, I went with her. I met her in English Lit. I liked her a lot, but she started knitting socks for me. I figured it was time to check out, and I did. But look, if I was a murderer, do you think I would have let you get out of that alley?
Please don't talk so loud. All I know is you went for the bait. You must have had some reason.
Well, you...
Not just to check on a crank phone call.
All right, listen, the fact is, I thought your sister might have... I thought she might have killed herself because I stopped going with her. Well, it sounds ridiculous, conceited, anything you want to call it. Anyhow, it's bothered me. Well, maybe I've been a disc jockey for too long, huh? Too many fan letters from kids.
I'm just spinning too many records. All right, I apologize.
So what was that bit about the police?
I don't know about it.
You did this on your own?
I had to. The man I would have called just wasn't available.
That was a real crazy chance, lady.
You weren't supposed to see me. All you had to do was show up. That would tell me you knew Dorothy and had some feeling of guilt. I'd have let the police take it from there.
Well, I'll tell you what, next time you let the police start it, huh? See, you called her Dory over the phone. What is that, a family name? What?
You never called her that?
Well, I knew you meant when you said kingship, but I never heard anybody call her Dory.
Somebody did. She mentioned it in her letter.
It could have been after we broke off. I knew she took up with another guy.
Who? What's his name?
I don't know. Just some guy she met on the campus. I never saw him. Wait a minute. I can find out easy enough, though. I've got his address
at
home.
His address?
Yeah. Well, you see, a couple of weeks after we broke off, she called me up and invited me to a party at her boyfriend's house. I figured she just wanted to show me or something, so I didn't go, but I wrote his address down in my notebook.
All right, let's get
it. Come on, hold it. What are you going to do with it?
Don't worry, I've learned my lesson. I'll take it to the police first thing in the morning.
Dwight and Ellen leave the club. Outside, they get a fright when a car driven by high-spirited youths mounts the pavement. Ellen sighs with relief and they walk on. Later, they arrive at a student dormitory.
It's all right. Most of the fellas are out. I'm over at the auditorium looking at last year's football pictures. I'm going to be a minute, huh?
While Ellen waits on a couch in the hallway, Dwight runs up to his room and begins searching through the drawers in a desk. He finds an address book and begins to search through its pages. As he does so, the wardrobe door opens.
Put it down, Dwight. Put it down.
Bud's pointing a gun at Dwight as he steps out and closes the door of the room.
What are you going to do?
Turn up the road.
Dwight turns up a typewriter roll and reads, "I've lived with Dorothy's killing on my conscience too long. Now that her sister suspects, I know there's no other way. Please forgive me for everything.
Oh, no, sit down.
Reluctantly, Dwight sits.
Please.
He stares up at Bud pleadingly.
You can have the address book.
Trace it, I've got
it. I'll tell her I couldn't find it. I'll forget I ever saw you.
Turn around.
Oh, please. Please.
Bud moves the gun closer to Dwight's head. He spots a photograph of Dwight holding a tennis racket with his left hand and changes position so that the gun's pointing at the left side of Dwight's head. Terrified, Dwight closes his eyes as Bud cocks the gun. Ellen hears the shot and runs up the stairs. A student in pajamas appears at a door, and he and Ellen both enter Dwight's room. Bud has hidden behind another door further along the corridor, and he quickly escapes down the stairs. The chief of police.
Pretty simple. Powell pushed the Kingship girl off the roof. Pressure got too great for him, and suicide note still in the typewriter if you want to take a look. Case opened again, closed again. But for good this time.
He actually had me believing it. Dorothy believed him, too. Must run in the family.
Well, I was going to ask, would you like me to phone your father, tell him about this?
Thanks. I'll phone him myself tonight.
Well, anything you'd care to say about the local police, you'd be right. You did it all. And the terrible thing is that if I'd known you were doing it, I'd have stopped you. Take Miss Kingship to her hotel.
An expensive black car travels along the tree-lined driveway of the Kingship's house and pulls up in the forecourt. A chauffeur gets out and opens the back door. Ellen climbs out. A butler opens the house door.
Bill. Ellen.
Hello, Dad.
You're all right?
Better. Much better. And you?
If you're better, I'm fine. Oh, by the way, there's somebody waiting for you.
What?
In there.
She walks through to a library.
Bud?
Hi, Ellen. How are you?
Bud.
Good.
Now Bud and Ellen are riding horses at the gallop through mountainous desert country. They arrive at a spot marked with a weather-beaten wooden sign, and they both dismount.
A fixed race. They're Kingship horses. They do what you tell them to do.
After Dad tells them it's okay.
You know, I think he'd do it, too, for you.
He has changed lately. Then maybe I have, too.
I have something to do with it?
Something? No. Everything. I had to say it because you wanted me to. Your diabolic spell.
Not at all. Our relationship is a simple matter of chemistry. Like attracts like. Happens with minerals, happens with people. Basic formula. People who like the same things like each other.
I was saying that to somebody just the other day. Really is uncanny. Same taste in books, and music.
And jokes. Now don't forget jokes. No good if you don't laugh at the same things. No good if you don't really know what the other one's thinking.
I thought the chemistry took care of that.
What I'm thinking about goes back before that. Something about me you don't know.
A dark past? How exciting.
Oh, it is. I'm a man with a shameful, sinister secret. You know what it is?
He leans closer to her.
I've never really been in love before. Now, Ellen, if this is going to embarrass you, upset you in any way...
It doesn't embarrass me.
Because if it does, we can pick up a new formula and start all over.
I just want to tell you that
can't
I...
Can't you wait?
I'm sorry.
Because I can wait. I think that's what I really wanted to tell you. I'll wait. I'll wait until you fall in love with me. I'll even wait until you tell me to stop waiting. That it's useless. That it hasn't any point.
I can tell you that now, but... there isn't any point in either of us waiting any longer. I don't want to. The formula's still working, you know. I'm in love, too. For the very first time in my life. With you.
They kiss. Now Bud's arriving at the Kingship house in the black car. Bud begins to open the door, then stops, waiting for the chauffeur to walk round and do it for him. He helps his mother from the car.
32 rooms, Mother.
Oh, you think
he'll get it, Mother. Wait till you see the swimming pool.
Is that where they're going to announce the engagement?
Well, not in the pool, but around it probably, the terrace.
Mrs. Corliss hesitates near the door.
Bud.
Oh, now, Mother, don't worry. They'll love you. You'll see.
She checks her reflection in a reflective door knocker.
Mother.
What is it?
Blouse, why did you wear a thing like that? I told you the kind of people that would be here.
Oh, I thought you'd
well,
like
it. Well, it's too late now. Oh, Ellen.
Mrs. Corliss, how perfectly lovely you look.
I thank you, Ellen. Thank you very much.
I hope you'll find your room comfortable. We put you near bed.
Miss Ellen, the floor is still waiting.
Okay. Go on, honey. You tend to your party. I'll take Mother upstairs.
Excuse me.
Another car arrives outside and parks by a hedgerow. Gordon gets out. He adjusts his tie as he makes his way to the front door. Ellen.
Champagne. But all the
fourth
one is your
own. Hello. Is Miss Kingship at home?
Yes, she is.
Gordon.
First hello, Ellen.
Hello.
How are you?
Everybody's going to be coming along.
You think you have troubles. Where are those parking boys I ordered?
Well, I certainly picked a swell time to call, didn't I?
A hectic last minute, Gordon. But the perfect day. So to show off this.
Gee. I think that's a pretty ring. Congratulations. Well, now I know I picked the wrong time. Look. Suppose I give you a call sometime tomorrow, the next day, huh?
Don't you dare go.
No, honestly, I think my business is just a little out of tune with your festivities here. It can wait.
If you think after that I'm going to spend the afternoon wondering, that's all I'd need.
Well, can you spare a minute?
Sure, come here. If I can spare a minute, so can you.
Well, it concerns your sister's friend, you know, the late disc jockey, Dwight Powell. Seems that he was quite a tennis player, too. You know, I helped my uncle wrap up that case. I made the usual inquiries to fill out the record, and, well, there's one interesting fact that just came straggling in. It seems that on the day your sister died, Dwight Powell was playing tennis in a tournament in Mexico City. He's been there almost a week.
I don't believe it.
Well, you'll have to. His teammates dug up a news picture. There he was. And that was the date.
If he wasn't in Lupton, he couldn't have killed her. He didn't kill her. Why kill himself?
That's it. So instead of murder and a suicide, we have something else. Two murders. Do you want to go a step further?
The man who killed Dorothy is still free.
That's right. Well, I guess the next time I say I'd better go, you'd better let me. Actually, I gambled. I thought I saw enough happiness there to override most anything. Anyway, as far as I'm concerned, the case is just starting. I'll keep you posted.
Gordon, you're not leaving.
I have to. I think my minute's just about up.
Oh, Ellen.
Bud hesitates when he sees Gordon.
I want you to meet somebody.
Miss Ellen, I hate to bother
you. Later, but... Bill. This is the one, Gordon. Bud Corliss, Gordon Grant.
How do you do?
How are you, Bud? Congratulations. I've heard about you for quite some time.
In a certain amount of detail.
I don't believe I've met you before. Are you from here?
No, I'm from Lupton.
Lupton? Mm-hmm.
And you beat all the local guests to the party?
I'd say that rates some kind of reward, Gordon.
Well, I'm not exactly that kind of guest, actually. I'm unexpected, unprepared, and... just on my way out. I really do have to go, Ellen.
Gordon just dropped by to give me a message.
Mm-hmm. And to wish you both lots of happiness.
Well, thank you very much.
Nice meeting you, Bud. I'll be in touch, Ellen.
Mr. Kingship's office called. Your father's on his way.
Ah, thank heaven. Now you can take your problems to him and give me a chance to get ready.
Ellen. He's a nice fella. Have you known him long?
I met him because of Dorothy. He knew her at the university.
Oh. Well, that probably explains it. I had a feeling something upset you.
On a day like this, I'm not going to be upset by anything. And I'm not going to let you be. I really must hurry now.
Darling, you know that whatever concerns you concerns me.
It works both ways. You better hurry, too, if you're going to change.
Da, 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 da.
Gordon's car pulls up at a petrol station out on a desert road. An attendant walks over as Gordon gets out.
Would you fill her up with ethyl, please?
Right.
Going into a phone booth, Gordon puts on his glasses and makes a call.
Hello, operator. At long distance, I want to put in a collect call to Chief of Police Howard Chesser in Lupton. Yeah, 25427. Right. And my name is Grant, Gordon Grant. Hey, would you check the oil? I think it's a little low.
Right.
Hello, Charlie? Yeah, is Uncle Howard there? Put in about a 30 weight, too, and I think we'll check that left rear tire. Hello, Howard?
This is Gordon.
Yeah. Yeah, well, I just saw her. Yeah, and I just met the guy she's going to marry, too. Well, what I wanted to tell you was that I think I've seen him before. There at the university. Well, I'll tell you the point. The point is that I think I've seen him with Dorothy Kingship. Yeah. Well, his name is Bud Corliss. Yeah, that's right. Corliss. Well, now, look, let's be sure. You call the registrar's office and check with her, right. And then call me back. Yeah, all right, I'll wait around for an answer. I'll be at the Chapman Hotel.
The engagement party's in full swing.
You fellas in aluminum are just as badly off as we are.
No, no more for me, thanks. I can see the look in my wife's eye.
We have to be leaving, too.
So soon?
Will you excuse me, Mr. Kingship?
Oh, certainly.
Congratulations, Bud. Nice to have met you.
Thank you, Mr. Gretchen.
Bud?
Mr. Furman?
Leo, you did all right. He's a fine boy.
Thank you.
There's a Mr. Grant to see you. He says it's important.
Excuse me, please.
Hope we can see you later.
Right. How are you today?
Mr. Kingship.
Mr.
When is it going to be, dear?
This coming Sunday, if we can clear the church.
They just didn't want to wait. I don't know. Children seem so impatient these days. I know in my time...
Shall I tell them about your time, Mother? Better yet, shall I tell them about you?
Bud, that isn't fair.
Mother, hello. No waiting at all.
Did he tell you he went to the State University?
Well, that's a simple question.
Simple and preposterous. Your whole implication.
I take it then he didn't tell you.
Why should he?
Well, why wouldn't he? Fell engaged to one of your daughters, not mentioning that he knew the other one?
Knew her? I wasn't aware your uncle discovered that.
No, that part came from me. But he's checking on it right now.
In other words, you had the unmitigated gall to come here now on an occasion like this with no proof at all. Why?
To find out whether you knew that Bud Corliss knew Dorothy.
Of course he didn't know.
Well, how do you know?
Because he would have said so.
Thank you, sir. That's all I wanted to hear you say. Because if he did know her and didn't mention it, then he must have had a reason. Unless, of course, he told Ellen and just happened to bypass you. Well, we can certainly check on that.
What do you mean?
Ask her.
No.
Why not?
But it's unthinkable, the whole thing. I know that boy.
For how long?
But it's degrading to ask her a thing like that.
And the police don't look at it that way.
I'm not the police, Mr. Grant. I'm her father.
Well, then, for that very reason, please give it more serious consideration.
Mr. Grant, up until recently, Ellen and I have... Well, she's under the impression that I'm trying to run her life. I can't do it. I won't do it.
Well, if you won't, then I'll have to do it for you.
Gordon, you didn't have to get back after all. I'm so glad. I came looking for Dad to tell him everyone was leaving.
She takes in their serious expressions.
You told him about Powell. Don't you think you should have let me do that?
Ellen, did you know that Bud knew Dorothy?
Why are you asking me that?
Did you? Did Bud ever tell you?
I want to know why you're asking such a question.
Look, I started it. I recognized Bud when he introduced us. It would have been a good time for you to remind us we went to the same university, but you didn't because obviously you didn't know.
I didn't because it wasn't so.
No. Because he didn't tell you.
If he started this, how eager you must have been to join him. How you must have searched for just such a lie. You ruined Dorothy's life. And my mother's. And now you want to do the same for me. Well, it won't work. Don't ever mention this to me again. Not any part of it. Not ever.
Ellen goes, and Gordon lets out a heavy sigh.
Oh, I'm sorry, Mr. Kingship. But I'll see you again, sir. Either to apologize humbly for being wrong, or else to prove that I was right.
Gordon goes, leaving Leo looking shaken. Outside, only a few guests remain as Ellen walks out onto the terrace and surveys the garden. She looks at a member of the catering staff who's tidying away some food, then down to where Bud's bidding farewell to two guests.
Goodbye.
Goodbye, and thanks again.
It's been a pleasure meeting you.
Thank you.
Goodbye.
Ellen heads down some stairs, moving past the departing couple and making her way to Bud, who's standing by a drinks trolley.
Well, that was the last. It was a wonderful party, Ellen, a real ball.
People. The things people do when they see happiness.
Hey, did you notice that, too? They left here glowing like Christmas trees. I just wonder if your father's going to glow when he gets the bill. Think we're worth it?
1,000 times over.
Hey, I'm going to have to give you some lessons on economy. Do you want to go to dinner?
Don't even mention it.
How about a show?
To tell you the truth, darling, I'm absolutely exhausted all at once. If you want an early start to the smelter tomorrow, you better cancel me out early tonight.
All right. Off to bed with you, then. And pleasant dreams. Good night, Donna.
They kiss, and Ellen rushes off with a smile. Now Ellen's behind the wheel as she and Bud drive along a desert road.
Kingship,
mines.
Bud lights a cigarette and offers it to Ellen, but she shakes her head. Their white open-top car travels downhill towards a large mining complex. They pull up at a yellow road barrier, which a hard-hatted employee pulls open for them.
Larger you thought or smaller?
No complaints.
They drive into the complex. Gordon's having coffee with Leo on the terrace when the butler approaches with a phone.
This is your call, sir.
Good, it's from the restaurant. Outskirts of town.
Gordon holds the phone out to Leo.
I'd like you to take it, if you don't mind.
Kingship speaking.
This is the confirmation on it, Mr. Kingship. Corliss was Dorothy's boyfriend, all right. The waitress says they came here often, for several weeks before she died.
I see.
I'll call the precinct police and have him picked up right away.
Yes. Thank you, Chief.
Slowly, Leo puts the phone down as the butler returns.
Tell Miss Ellen I want to see her at once.
She's not at home. She and Mr. Corliss drove out to the smelter.
Gordon looks alarmed.
There's no danger of anything happening to her up there. Why, he doesn't even know he suspects him.
Ellen does.
I'll have the car brought around right away.
Good. I'll phone the police and tell them where we're going.
Next to a number of industrial vehicles...
$2 million on wheels. It's hard to believe, isn't it? $50,000 for a truck.
Of course, we get a slight discount. Buying them by the gross.
Pulling up in the car, Bud and Ellen survey a huge mine pit.
Looks like the center of creation.
They drive on and are soon standing near a gigantic mechanical digger that's gouging earth and sand from the side of a hill. It drops its bucket load into a waiting truck, and Bud takes Ellen's arm, ushering her back to the car.
At the rate they're going, they'll be in China for Easter Sunday.
They've been working this pit about 8 years.
7.
Darling, you sound like you knew the Kingship mine long before the Kingship girl.
Oh, Ellen, no, it's not that. It's just that mining of any kind has always interested me, ever since I could remember.
Like you said, two of a kind. Copper, music. You should have heard Dorothy on the subject of W.C. and me. I used to drag that girl to every concert.
I tried to see most of them, too. Shall we go up?
How were the concerts in Lupton?
Not bad for a town that... That was some time ago. They're probably even better today.
The car tour continues until Ellen pulls up at a spot overlooking another section of the vast quarry. Bud gets out to have a look.
Look at that.
I've seen it. I think we better be getting back now.
He looks over his shoulder at her cold expression, then steps around the car towards her. He rests his elbow on the windscreen hub as he studies her face.
Go on like this. I've got to know.
You mean about Lupton?
Yes.
Did I go to the university? Did I know your sister? Yes, I did, Ellen. I even had a few dates with her.
But why didn't you tell me?
All right, I will. When I transferred up here and happened to meet you, I saw right away what you were going through. By telling you, that it helped you forget.
Later.
Later we fell in love. And I knew I mustn't tell you. I'd be chaining you to a constant reminder of grief every time you looked at me.
be putting a curse on both of us. I suppose that I should have...
You still don't understand. If it was only innocent,
what did you say? If it was innocent. If it was.
I didn't mean that.
Is that what your love is like? Is that a sample of your faith in me? Your trust?
Oh, Bud!
Bud walks over to the edge of the deep pit, and Ellen has to wait until a truck passes till she can get out of the car. She rushes to him and throws her arms around him, but he steps back from her.
Who put you up to this? Grant? He probably saw me with her once. What an operator. He drives all the way up here to tell you that.
Who's to tell me about Powell?
The fellow who killed your sister?
Except that he didn't. He didn't kill himself. He was killed by the same man who killed Dorothy.
How do they know such a thing? They're bluffing. He left a note. It said it all there. They didn't find anybody. How do they even know your sister was killed? They're guessing, Ellen.
Howell was about to give me the murderer's address. The murderer knew that. He overheard us in that bar.
He just happened to be there?
He didn't just happen to be there, Bud. He followed me. He followed every move I made since I'd arrived in town.
Ellen, that's even crazier. How could he?
Known I was in Lupton. I sent him a message telling him so. Remember?
You think you know. I'm telling you, you're wrong, Ellen. All these things are coincidence, one right after another. Me knowing her, the university. So did 100 other guys.
You're tall and slender. That was in her letter.
What letter?
Right beside me all along.
What does it mean? Nothing. Dory knew it, doesn't...
Dory. There weren't a dozen called her Dory. There was only one.
Slowly, Bud turns to face Ellen, who holds his gaze. He steps closer to her.
Why did you have to do this, Ellen? To me. To yourself. Most of these things you've said, the police don't even know.
They do. Yes, they do.
No. No, they don't. Or I wouldn't be here, would I? And you wouldn't be here with me. I put my whole life into this, Ellen. Everything I ever wanted. Right here. I can't give it up.
You're insane. Can't you see that? You can't go any further.
Your father and I will grieve together. Boy, I'm not for sure you're doing this.
Bud tries to push her over the edge, but she struggles valiantly. He spots two cars in the distance approaching from two different roads on either side of the mine pit. Gordon's in the back of Leo's car, and he points out of the window.
There.
Bud sees a fast-approaching truck coming round a corner. He hurls Ellen into its path, but the driver turns sharply to avoid her and knocks Bud flying over the edge of the mine. Pressed against the rock wall at the far side of the road, Ellen hangs her head with relief. Leo and Gordon arrive in the car, and they both get out and run to Ellen. Reassured that she's all right, Gordon rushes to the edge of the mine pit, and Ellen follows. Leo looks on as Ellen joins Gordon in looking down to where Bud fell to his death. Gordon removes a handkerchief from his breast pocket and offers it to Ellen. Looking up at his face briefly, she takes it, then walks away from the edge of the precipice. Her face betraying no emotion, she brushes past Leo just as a police car pulls up nearby. She stops and after a moment turns to face her father. She steps towards him and lays a hand upon his arm before climbing into the back of the car. Leo and Gordon both get into the vehicle with her, and the chauffeur drives them away. The end.